audiobook MP3 of this book from nearly a century back. THY Sun Liveth. Messages from a Dead Soldier to His Mother. Boston 1919. Remark that this book is open online, and a copy to follow the recitation reading here, can be downloaded or read by finding the textbook on galactic.no/rune. If not finding link here, you can just Google THY Sun Liveth, plus galactic.no/rune. Numbers read some in between a page numbers in the original book from 1919. Audiobook will be uploaded on www.galactic.no/rune/ledboka/. Foreword. In issuing anonymously a book of this character, the publishers feel that a few words of explanation are necessary. The manuscript was received from an author known to them, accompanied by the following letter. The notes for this manuscript came into my possession several months ago, but I have not seen my way clear to submit it for publication until now, when the poignant grief of the world moves every heart to offer all it may of comfort. I am convinced that the simply presented letters of the soldier killed in Flanders contain comfort for all who now mourn or must mourn in the future. I should like to see these letters given a wide circulation through the medium of an inexpensive book. Convinced of the sincerity of the author, and realizing that these messages from an American soldier were no ordinary spirit communications, the publishers asked for further information. The author replied, "I ask you to regard the book as truth." Foreword. Unaccompanied by proofs of any sort, making its own explanation and appeal. This book is published with the hope that it will fulfill the author's wish, give comfort to those of whom the war has demanded the bodies of their loved ones. Its message, as expressed in one of Bob's communications to his mother, is "There is no death. Life goes on without hindrance or handicap. The one thing that troubles the men who come here is the fact that the ones that loved them are in agony." THY Sun Liveth. Every evening when I am at home, and I am staying at home rather closely these days, knitting interminable skeins of grey yarn into socks for the boys in the trenches, I go up into Bob's room and browse around among his traps and finger his tobacco-smelling clothes in the foolish way of mothers. A man's room is a queer place, when the man has gone. This one, across the hall from mine, is the one Bob chose for himself when he was graduated from the nursery. It was not his first choice. With the announcement that he no longer wanted to be watched over at night, he selected and preempted the guest chamber in the farthest part of the house and moved in with his dog and a guinea pig. He put in the night there, too, without a whimper. But in the morning he informed me that he felt he ought to be near me in case I needed his help. He moved, and the room is one volume of his history from the day he was 5 years old, a record of his progress from that time until the bugles called him away. His books in the shelves range from Mother Goose Tales to Gant and his Clan of Thinkers, and up to What Morse Planted and Marconi Made to Blossom, the last named of the thumbed books. Bob took to telegraphy as a spark takes to the airwave. He was one of the first to raise a wireless mast from the top of his home and, of course, I had to study and experiment with him. He bullied me into learning the code and being the party of the second part to take his messages. Looking back upon this now, I am impressed with the methods that are used by the destiny that shapes our ends. Had it not been for that inkling of the science of telegraphy which I gained in our play, I should not have heard a message that, but of this I will speak further. It was something of a bore to me to put in my time trying to master a complex thing like the wireless, and, of course, I never did become proficient. But when the grind was over, and we both had acquired some speed and receptiveness, it was great fun, and we had a secret between us that made us pals. We used to sit up here in this room and pick up diplomatic secrets which we could not, fortunately, decode, and international messages which we could not, unfortunately, I believe now, decipher. And when Bob began to really grapple with the mathematics which were to make his path straight to his eagerly adopted profession of electrical engineering, he spent his leisure hours in trying to simplify Marconi's already simple apparatus. We were here together the day Millie, the maid, brought up the afternoon mail and gave Bob a long, official-looking envelope which proved to contain an order from Washington to immediately dismantle the wireless apparatus. We had heard that amateurs were making nuisances of themselves, even in space, but it came as a shock to find that we were included in that list. Bob was literally a young thunder god when he stood above his instrument and flashed his protests to the Capitol. Every time I glanced toward that corner of the room, I recall how he looked with his mad on, as little Myra Kelly used to say. He is a good-looking boy, tall, athletic, strong-featured and blue-eyed, with his dark hair brushed straight back in the fashion young New York has so generally adopted. He had on his working togs at the time of which I speak, gray trousers, low collar and soft tie. He was tense with indignation. I suggested that there might be something which we did not understand. He said he ought to be told why he was being bossed about like that, and he intended to find out what the deuce the government meant by it. We did not find out very much. But the curt message to dismantle without delay was not long coming. Bob showed a little fight. I told him that we had never been obliged to practice obedience to those in authority, so it came hard, but as Americans, united for the good of all in our common cause, it seemed the thing to conform to any requirement and ask why afterwards. He did not yield without a struggle, but he yielded. "It's a darn shame," he grumbled, as he came back through the window with the multiple antennae in his arms and subdued the wires to a coil upon the table. "I believe I was just on the verge of hitting a plan to do away with a lot of this trumpery." He sat on the edge of the table and dangled his long legs restlessly. "Darn it," he repeated, in vexation, "I'm going to hire a little etheric wave of my own." "Why, Mother, James," he meant William James, of Harvard, rather a lion in his estimation, "James says that all the means of inter-mind communication are at hand and available. Their utilization only awaits developed human intelligence." He started to put away the coils and vrios parts that he had brought in, but decided to leave the receiver where it was until he figured out some plan to make laboratory use of it. I left him fuming, literally, in a blue haze, and went down for tea. Our house is one of the old homes on the Hudson below Tarrytown. I was born, married and widowed here, and here Bob first saw the earthlight. The people who live with us and serve us are, in turn, served by us. We feel ourselves, truly, a part of the soil. We live simply, and have had just the ordinary experiences of the comfortable American family in church and society and home. I want to dwell upon this sane and altogether unimaginative existence on account of what I have to tell later. Millie had brought in the tea cart, and Bob came down to join me. He was still irritated, but he ate a whole jar of damson jam and demolished the bread plate until 6. I had to remind him that we were only 2 hours from dinner. "Let's go out somewhere," he jumped up, laughing. "Tramp or row, which shall it be? I'll get your wrap and scarf." I chose the river. I knew the canoe would keep him occupied, and I felt that his nerves needed steadying. We went out and down to where the little boat was bumping its nose against the pier, and in a few minutes Bob was sending it, with his college stroke, toward the fleet that lay in the river. We have liked to be together in great moments, the boy and I. This was a great moment. We paddled in and among the ships and looked up at them with pride in our hearts. "They look invincible, don't they?" I quavered. He gave me a quick look. "Mother, that's what you said the day we went over the Lusitania." My heart plunged, sickeningly. The light seemed wiped from the sky. Bob was still staring as though he, too, had suddenly seen an object, long unheeded, before his eyes. "What I want to know," he jerked out, "is this: why aren't we at war with Germany, when Germany is at war with us?" He stopped to shout to me not to rock the boat. I think I nearly sent it to the bottom of the stream. For, suddenly, I saw what had stopped our play with the wireless. All the events of the past few weeks, which had appeared of little consequence, loomed big before me. "Let's go home," I said weakly. "And don't talk to me. Our country is at war, and I did not know it until this minute." He devoted all his attention to getting free of the ships and avoiding the big swell made by a small tug. I wondered if it was the fading light that changed his face so when he said, "At last, you know what that means, mother?" And I answered, untruthfully, "I know what it means." He suddenly smiled and threw a paddle full of spray over me as we landed. "Oh, you Spartan mother," he laughed. "That come back with your shield or upon it business does not go with such a fat little rascal as you are. Come, I'll race you to the house." But I held back. "Robert, don't," I whispered, "I am an old woman with a boy that is going to the guns." 8. He came back and put his arm around me, for I was trembling. "We can't start the thing ourselves," he said, "we've got to wait for Washington, so cheer up. Who can tell what may happen to stave it off?" But I knew that it was to be. Knew as well as I did months later when war was declared. Meanwhile we went about our ordinary ways, with the exception that I concentrated on Red Cross and foreign relief work and withdrew from some of my club activities. Bob entered Columbia and came out for the weekends, at which time I had our usual house parties, which included so many pretty girls that he could not, for the life of him, fall in love with anyone. People thought that I wanted to monopolize my son and keep him from his own love and happiness. But he knew that my hands were off his life. I was just an old campaigner showing a good way but leaving the youngster free to discover a better one, if he could. I was rather surprised, however, as the weeks passed and he was still heart-free. I think his mind was more or less occupied with his electrical experiments and he still fussed over his demolished wireless station and spent many hours, when he should have been skylarking, over the instrument on the table yonder. "Thunderation, mother," he said. "I can't get away from the feeling that I ought to get up to the Nth degree in this science. The Germans are using it in ways that we do not know. And if I am called to fight, as of course I shall be, I want to trick up my sleeve that will beat the enemy at his own game. Anybody but you would laugh to hear me say it, but I have a hunch that I am going to be needed in some particular capacity before we win this war. And you mark my words, someday when you are up here in this old room of mine, you are going to hear from your little Robbie. I am going to put the thing together as well as I can and keep within the restrictions. And when I am in France I'll see if I can't figure out a system of relays or something or other so that I can get in touch with you." I did not think it possible then. But I remembered what he had said when the old house was only a lonely, grey pile of empty rooms, and he had gone, with the unit, at the first call to arms. What I felt to see my only son go to war is just what other mothers have felt and will feel as more and more young men are given to their country. But what further I have to reveal is what every father and mother should know. And quite simply I am going to tell it. Bob was assigned to an engineer's corps and soon won his commission as second lieutenant. He was among the first to cross. I had a dozen letters from somewhere in France, and it was not hard to catch something of his spirit and enthusiasm. He was glorying in his hard work and his prospects for getting a whack at the Hun. He had qualified for wireless work, much to his delight, and had been out on a reconnaissance. Pershing, himself, had commended him. He warned me not to worry if I did not often hear that letters are hard to get through. And now came one telling me of fun in camp and the brighter side of soldiering. He added that I had been a brick to him and made him a man. I brought this letter up to read in his room and was laughing and crying over it, as women will, when the wireless signaled attention. I sprang to the key, and in a moment I had the message that Bob had promised to find means to send me here. It is before me now as I made the translation from the Morse code, adding only the marks of punctuation. "Mother, be game. I am alive and laughing you. But my body is with thousands of other mothers' boys near Lens. Get this fact to others if you can. It's awful for us when you grieve, and we can't get in touch with you to tell you we are all right. This is a clumsy way. I'll figure out something easier. I'm confused yet, Bob." So the news that my son had been killed came to me from his own intelligence by the methods we had used together in our experiments here in this very room. And so I am transcribing it, as he told me to do, for all to see who can be convinced of its sincerity. I have no explanations or proofs other than those that are given here, A man who was killed in battle and is yet alive, and able to communicate with the one closest to him in sympathy, must make his own arguments. Jay have no knowledge of established psychic lakes or limitations. But I know what I know. My own emotions, the more or less eventful chapters of my life and the lives of those about me, have nothing to do with this book of letters from far places. Bob and I want 12. To ease, so far as may be, the intolerable anguish of the world. There was nothing spectacular or notable in his death. A month later the papers gave his name among hundreds of others that were mowed down by German guns. He must have communicated with me very soon after he fell. And first and last his urgent desire was, and is, to reassure and comfort the families of departed soldiers. In the messages that follow in their order, many will find a naturalness that must appear absurd. They will feel that, as in the case of all experiments beyond the bourne of the material senses, the spiritual communications are sadly mixed with earth. In this view I can sympathize. I have always turned away from books of alleged spiritual sources because I have felt that the author's soul was not advanced intellectually beyond the very ordinary human scale. I wanted the evidence of an immediate angelhood, all-wise, all-seeing, all-knowing. But I am now convinced that the processes of education among the worlds are somewhat the same, and I am decidedly comforted to realize that Bob Bennett is Bob Bennett still. Loving and slangy and familiar, but with a tremendously enlarged sphere of activities and absolute freedom. 13. From physical handicaps and the restricted period of years. I have had, up to the time that I began to arrange for publishing, almost daily communications from my son. Some of these are personal letters, which I shall not include in this work, lest in the future someone may pierce our necessary anonymity. But all those that seem to me to clear somewhat the mystery, and to simplify the methods of mental intercourse, are given as received. As will be noted by an early letter, the use of the wireless telegraph was soon abandoned for the better known automatic writing simply as a matter of convenience. This will, of course, make skeptics say that these are the writer's subconscious emanations, nothing more or less. Well, maybe they are. I cannot say that they are not. For I do not know what subconsciousness is. What stuff it is made of. Whence it comes or whither it goes. Maybe it is the bridge, the link between the mortal and immortal part of man. Maybe it is the inherent life which all scientists, from first to last, have sought without finding, that invisible stumbling block over which every well-built theory of atoms and electrons takes its headlong fall. If subconsciousness is one of these, it is more than probable that my boy is using its avenues of communication. For they must be clear enough from his end of the road. In fact, as will be seen in the notes, if we were not asleep at our switchboards, we might all be in communication as easy and voluntary as other people in the commonplaces who send telegrams to each other every day. Bob dwells upon the simplicity of it. He makes it plain, to me, that there is no need of the outside hocus-pocus of mystery trumpery and cabinets and ignorant go-betweens, trances and crystal gazings, and all that sort of thing. He dwells on the discovery that the mortal really puts on immortality. He finds it difficult to describe what the difference is in what we call a spiritual world. The ways of living, eating, drinking, and dressing. As far as I can see, he says, in one of his very late letters, this is a place where one can carry out his own inclinations. For instance, I am plugging away at the wireless as I wanted to do before I came. I live with a lot of other fellows in camp just now. In looking over his letters I cannot see that he has revealed the secrets of his new surroundings. He does not seem to be 15. Withholding anything purposely, but my curiosity in regard to who's who in heaven and my questions concerning theological matters do not, as yet, receive attention. It may be that the higher diplomacy withholds these things, or it may be that we are not sufficiently enlightened to understand even these things with which we are continually confronted. I do not in the least understand the simplest phenomena of visible nature, but if Bob does not tell me how he gets his clothes, or intimate as to who does the work in the far places, I think there must be something apocryphal about his messages. and because of unbelief I fall back into the common attitude, a woman mourning for her son and cannot be comforted. Faith has accomplished about every duty assigned to it, apparently, but the recognition of the free progress of the liberated soul. Proof, proof, we call. But there is no proof. And so some saturnine man builds a creed out of his own meager understanding. And he puts heaven high and hell low, and a weak and violent God between them. If I had not the certainty that these communications I have are authentic, the literal messages from my son to me, I should still rather accept a pleasant faith on trust than an unpleasant one on the same condition. One thing alone is certain. The inevitableness of that change which most of us call death and poet seers, like Wordsworth, call transition. The words are synonyms. My boy has brought me to a sense of the sane and simple naturalness with which our family life goes on when we have finished this classroom work and progressed to far places. I think there are analogies in nature at every hand, millions of little shelled creatures, the names of which I do not know, and as many more minute organisms undergo successive changes and developments that are not less marvelous than the emergence of the soul from the body. Those who have experienced death have found it easy, particularly those who have gone out in the crash of battle or tremendous and sudden disasters. Bob speaks at first hand of this. And from now on his letters must bear the consolation that he so wishes to extend, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Letter number 2, by wireless. Attention, get this across, there is no horror in death. I was 1 minute in the thick of things, with my company, and the next minute Lieutenant Wells touched my arm and said, "Our command has crossed, let's go." I thought he meant the river, and followed him under the crossfire barrage the Tommies made, up to a hillside that I had not noticed before. A clean spot not blackened by the guns. Lots of fellows I knew were there, and strange troops. But they looked queer. I glanced down at myself. I was olive drab all right. But my uniform was not khaki, it seemed to be a fabric of some more tenuous kind. I had no gun. I overtook Wells. "What in the deuce is the matter with me? With us all?" I asked. He said, "Bob, we're dead." I didn't believe it at first. I felt all right. But the men were moving, and I fell in line. When we marched through the German barbed wire barricades and in front of the howitzers, I realized that the body that could be hurt had been shed on the red field. Then I thought of you. Sent that wireless from an enemy station in the field. The officer in charge couldn't have seen me. But he heard, I guess, by the way his A's popped. He sent a few shots in my direction, anyway. I'm using an abandoned apparatus in a trench today, depending on relays. We are assigned to duty here for the present. According to Wells. I don't know how he knows. It seems while we have no supernatural power to divert or stop bullets, we can comfort and reassure those who are about to join us. There has been much talk about the presence of one supposed to be the savior among the dying. I should not wonder if that were true. The capacity for believing is enlarged by experience, but as yet I have no more real knowledge than any of the other fellows. I will let you know as I gain information. Others, like me, will pick up and relay the messages. Number 3, by wireless. Attention, as I see this war, a curious understanding of its purpose and ultimate result is dawning in my mind. The soldiers are the pick of humanity. The young, brave, blameless manhood that has been brought to its majority on the earth so that it may form an ideal democracy in this existence which, I am told, is of permanent character. I am bungling the big idea. But, you know what I mean, Mother. I'll grow clearer, maybe. Wells is getting to be a whale of an oracle. Some of the fellows are in a funk, and others are sullen and unhappy, homesick, I guess. The young married men mostly. If they could get in P10 touch with their folks, it would be all right. That's why I want to try and simplify some system of communication. You have never failed me, and now if you can get it firmly fixed in your mind that I am I, not what is vulgarly called a ghost but a being just as much as I ever was, we can start something worthwhile. It's got to begin with someone as level-headed as you are. I'm called away. Letter X, number H, by wireless. Attention, we hit upon the key word, when we agreed to use the word attention in our wireless practice. It is the word that unlocks the inner, or secret, ear to hear otherwise inaudible voices. Do you get me? I mean, when you want to talk with me, concentrate your mind by calling your own faculties, the unused ones, mostly, to attention. See if they don't respond. It may require practice, but I am told there is no reason in the world, notice the plural, why we should not talk with the greatest ease and without any mechanics. Come up and try tomorrow. See if I can't project my thought direct to yours. Bring pencil and tablet if you want to. But a fellow here who knows all about automatic writing says there is no pencil guiding by unseen hands about it. The recipient just takes dictation. Better bring the pencil. You will want to report this just as it is for our purpose. I'll find out all I can. But just now we are engaged here in relief work. Some of the chaps are very young, and we see them through. I'll explain about those unused faculties when I learn more definitely about them. Ed. Note. I tried to write automatically that afternoon, but what I got did not satisfy me. I seemed to be faking apostrophe. The message. I gave it up and called Bob by wireless as I used to call him. He did not answer. I tried again with the pencil and had a few words. But afterwards we progressed with increasing ease and freedom by means of that method. The unembedded messages following were all automatically written. This is harder, we'll have to practice, but it can be done. Try to realize that thought is the one thing that is absolutely unlimited. You can send your thought to the most remote place as easily as you can direct it to something in your immediate neighborhood. Science has 21. Not explained why. Interspace communication is not more mysterious than this. I want to put tins over, mother. Not on our account alone. But because the little old world needs comforting. If we can convince folks that this is true, we can go a long ways toward wiping out sorrow. I must go. Don't go to mediums. Some are, of course, genuine. But the dollar sign is an apartment to cover fraud. If you want to get in touch with us, get in touch. That is, get into a quiet corner and listen with your inner ear, your unused finer perceptions. You will be able to really hear what I am saying, after some practice. I am told this by a man who has come to instruct us. I think, on my own hook, that you will have to rid your mind of worry or prejudice before we can make much headway. Anyone who wants to can put out a mental wire that will be picked up. But you must beware of strangers. Quote that, there are scallywags ready to jump into all conversations and mix up things if they are permitted to do so. Keep your wires clear. You ask how to keep the scallywags away, and who and what are they? I don't. Just know who they are. I'll try and find out. But you have to make a law. That sounds occult and I do not want anything to be spooky or unnatural in these letters. But that is the expression I hear often concerning this particular difficulty. These wiretappers cannot get by, it seems, unless you permit them to fool you. You say, I will not entertain mischievous spirits, or something like that, and they beat it. I do not know why that is efficacious. But it is. I have just come in from duty. I mean by coming in that I have come back to what I may describe as field headquarters. As I get more accustomed to conditions, I see that there are about 1,000 men here, some of them boys from my regiment. We are really what might be called ambulance or Red Cross units, working to relieve suffering among the wounded and to guide newcomers. Mother, the soul leaves the body as a boy jumps out of a school door. That is, suddenly, and with joy. But there is a period of confusion when a fellow needs a friend. Quote that. We are the friends. I guess that is the best explanation I can give. I told you Jack Wells came through with me. P23. He has gone away now. I am told we go to other departments of usefulness, as others, suited to this field work, come on here. I will tell you as much as I can. You complain that you cannot really get much of an idea of conditions here from what I tell you. I want you to be able to take my dictation like a prize winner and, in the meantime, I'll try and get a line on things here. So far it is nothing very different from what we knew before the change. We go and come and serve. But evidently we are not seen.